Hello there, and welcome to the Comic Book Tesseract, the weekly comics netcast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I'm Justin Chalupka, alongside Jason Polyev. Every week, we review and preview the world of comics, along with other facets of geek chic culture. I am back. Hey, the rumors are not true. I did not, in fact, get an early copy of Diablo 3, which caused me to miss last week's show. My beta
Nothing
actually,
so sinister.
Yeah, no, my beta copy actually got cut off more than a couple weeks ago, so I was Diablo-less, like all the rest of us plebes, until this past Tuesday. But I am making up for lost time, so.
Yes, much to everybody else's dismay. Okay, I say dismay just to make you feel better.
Well, much to my wife and daughter's dismay, because they have basically lost their husband and father for probably the next couple weeks at least.
Well, the rest of us were holding parties without you, so screw you.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I got another keg coming after the show, so we got to hurry up and do this so that I can sign off on the delivery.
What's in it?
Well, you won't know because you'll be playing Diablo 3.
Well, no, I'm just curious because, like, if you're doing like a keg of Guinness, then I'm just gonna write out your death warrant now. Because one, because I would kill you for getting it, and two, because if you were to actually try to drink a keg of Guinness, it would kill you. So,
I'm not the only one drinking this thing. I'll have you know.
Anybody trying to drink a keg of Guinness, because as we all know, you do not drink a Guinness; you eat a Guinness.
Yes, with a fork and a knife out of a glass.
That is correct.
Okay. Anyways, let's get off the alcohol, off the video games for now, and let's go ahead and head straight into comic books. And first one we're going to talk about this week: Star Wars Force Storm, which is.
Well, we wanted to bring this up because I've been reading it. I've really been enjoying this. I think this is a unique view on a time in the Star Wars universe that is completely a blank slate. So no matter what they do in this, this is basically they're writing their own canon. And the story they've come up with for this story, I think, is actually really kind of neat. It's a cool idea talking to the origin of the Jedi Order. How did it all come to be in the first place? Which, the way they explain it, actually creates now even more questions, because the Jedi Order was actually progenerated by something else. Something else went out and got these Force sensitives from all of these different races across the galaxy and brought them together to this place. So now the question is, well, who the hell did that?
Yeah, and maybe that's part of the reason why I'm having a hard time getting into this book. You know, maybe it's just it wasn't something that originally interested me. So now going into, was it issue 3 this week?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah.
So with this being issue 3, I'm still not quite sucked into the story. You know, it's a book that you get that I'm borrowing to read for the show. Mm-hmm. And it took me half the issue before I really got into the story. Part of it could be just how many different characters they've got going on in this book.
Yeah, that is true.
And trying to keep that many characters straight. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you could always, it's a comic book. You can flip back and forth. I'm not sure who I'm supposed to be following though. And it makes it hard because there is no main character that's a through line for following in a story like this.
And, well, but if you think back to, when I say the original Star Wars, I'm going to talk about 3 through 6. There was a main character, but...
4 through 6.
But, yeah, well, excuse me, yes, 4 through well, 6. But the supporting characters were strong enough that you did follow storylines of theirs as well.
Yes, to some extent. If you actually look at episode 4, though, it's Luke's through line.
Oh yeah, no, definitely.
Completely all about Luke. And you've had secondary characters that as you had time to learn who they were by following their path with the main character, they then were able to expand and have growing parts in the fifth and sixth movies. Mm-hmm. If we're going to keep the actual Star Wars number in
grade. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, it starts off and they're able to take and you pick up with Luke's story, but in this case it's Luke injured on Hoth and Han going out there and finding him. Right. And so it does kind of show you some of the characters that you were used to from that first movie but it again picks up with the main character being Luke continuing on his journey. And right. It then will split off when they leave Hoth. It then splits off into the side characters.
Right. And Luke. With Han and Leia and with.
But you've already had an entire movie's worth of getting to know these secondary characters. And right. They didn't introduce very many main characters to follow that you hadn't already known in the first movie. You still had, they introduced C-3PO, R2-D2, Han, Chewie, Leia, all in the first movie as the secondary characters. They're the ones that you're following in that
second
story.
Some more strong than others. I mean, Leia in the first movie, is, I mean, very underrepresented. She's in it.
At the end of the movie.
To be rescued. And.
To be captured and then to be rescued.
Yeah, that's really about it.
And she gives the medals. She gives the awards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, well, let's take that and let's frame it back into this book. We have essentially a trio of students that are out trying to figure out what's going on with this ship that crash landed.
Right. So already we're starting off with three students plus three masters, because they each have their masters, which we are represented.
That we meet briefly, but the masters have not taken a very pivotal part in this story so far.
But they are still there, and in particularly this issue where they all start looking for their students.
Right.
So you're, all of a sudden you're jumping from the students to the masters looking for the students.
I would look at them as characters as being similar to either the Mon Mothma, the leader of the Jedi Rebellion, who in books and in other things outside of the main stories, got much more acclaim and much bigger story. Or, same with, Akbar. Or the Jedi Council
itself.
Or Boba
Fett for somebody else that's
actually,
not...
I was going to say Jedi Council, but Jedi Council was actually extinct by the time the four came out.
But if you go back and you read some of the other books, there's more growth in all of those areas.
Yeah, and the Council in the first three has that same type of role like the Council is playing in this book. They're there, they're talking, they're giving some exposition, but by and large, they're not part of the actionable plot line. Whereas you have these now three students, so Han, Luke, and Leia, which is not a bad analogy for the three students that are in there now. And you have the one bad guy, who in this book, which is actually, quick correction, this is number four, not number three.
Okay, number four.
Yeah. He has, or at least, is given some time as a slightly sympathetic character. He is, from what we can tell, appears to be this sort of like proto-Sith. This user of the dark side of the Force that is very much in line with what we know of as the Sith mentality. And he's given this very sort of sympathetic background story of why he is the way he is, what he's doing. And then right at the very end, he goes and just pulls this ultimate douche move that just makes you completely throw out all of the sympathy you had for him and just go, no, this dude's a dick. And to me, that is fantastic.
And
that's exactly what that type of character
should
have. And when
I started following him, that's when I could get into this story.
Okay.
It was that first half of the story where you've got the students that are looking around in the cave and trying to find him, and you've got the masters starting to look for the students.
Yeah.
And
I think the student thing at the beginning, that was more of to give explanation of what's going on with the force. There is actually a force storm that's occurring in the book.
Right.
That, and it's this storm of very, very dark side force energies, and it's influencing the students. It's causing them to have hallucinations, it gets their emotions boiling. And so I think that's there to just sort of explain, okay, look, this environmental effect is here and can be used again in the future. And I think it will.
Yeah.
And it also leads into, well, if we're going through this, what's this guy that's a user of the dark side going through?
Yeah. But I've had this problem, I think, with all three of these books. Maybe issue two, I didn't quite have quite as much of the same problem of actually getting involved into reading this book. And it could be that those three students aren't as compelling towards me. It could be that from book one, they started off by introducing a character with three or four pages and then jumping to the next character with three or four pages and the next one. And it was never enough for me to get interested or involved with any single characters.
There's just not enough meat there to really get invested with?
Yeah, with any single character to the point that they then jump to the next one and I don't know or care. So when they come back to the first one, it takes me a while to go, oh, wait, I'm back with the first person they were talking about.
Oh, right. That's what this character was all about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to sticking with one character or a pairing that's working together and bringing them through the arc and then introducing a secondary or a third character and bringing them in through with that same, to follow the same arc. For instance, in the original New Hope, you have Luke.
Yeah, you have that one main central character that it's his story, and then you have your secondary and tertiary characters, which can grow.
To some extent, you have a baton, which is passed from Leia to R2 and 3PO, but they're followed pretty much as a unit, and as soon as one splits off, you stop following that one until he rejoins, and it's back with the Jawas when they're introduced to Luke, and they pass the baton to Luke. Now you're actually following Luke, and all that that first part was the explanation for why Luke does what he does when he leaves Tatooine.
Right.
Then you're following Luke, and you have Obi-Wan Klingon, then you have... No, he
you
is
just,
not...
you just changed universes. Oh.
Obi-Wan... I did not... Obi-Wan clings on to Luke's story.
Uh-huh.
You have Han Solo and Chewbacca, then... Like Minox jump onto Luke.
Okay, much better, much better.
And you're following again.
I'm waiting for you to say that somebody's out of their Vulcan mind.
Nope, that would be illogical.
And then they then move. Oh my!
Through. You've got them, and they're moving through, but you're still following Luke's story. And these are all side characters.
For those of you playing Luke. The home game, we have reached level 7 of geekdom. be sure to adjust your shot glasses accordingly. Sorry, go on.
Okay. But they're following Luke's story, and they may have individual plot threads of things they need to do to help Luke advance, but they're all, again, it's following Luke, pushing Luke forward in his story as he moves forward to rescue the princess.
So I would say with this is, it's almost like you're kind of,
I don't know who to follow. Am I supposed to follow the Force Hound, who's that Sith character that you were talking about?
I would dare say you're holding on for a hero.
A hero for the rest of my life?
Yeah, that's what you're looking for.
There really is no main protagonist in this.
I
think that may be my problem. I have a problem with TV shows that do the same thing. They start introducing a whole bunch of characters, and I don't know who I'm following. And all of a sudden...
Well, but you enjoyed, like, Lost. Lost had the same multiple...
Lost did it, they would spend an entire episode following one person, let you know who that person was,
and then they might
go to the next one. And you'd see some of these secondary characters that are following along on that first main person story. Later on, when they start getting to some of the minor ones, they might have half an episode per person and introduce you to two people. But
let me throw this one out there because we'll come back to this a little later in the show. What about a show like Community?
Okay,
where it's an ensemble cast.
Yeah, and maybe that shows the strength of the show Community in that they're able to. But part of it is also you're stuck in a room, so you're seeing them all interact with each other, and the way that they do they're spending most of their time.
Yeah. Okay.
And there are times when they do. You know, actually, Community is for a large part about Jeff Winger's character and his returning, and the people that are around him at the school. Uh-huh. But again, they're all interacting in a single room, so it makes it a lot easier to follow who's who when they're all interacting.
Yeah.
So by the time you learn those characters, then they can split off. And they have done episodes that tend to focus more on a single character.
Yeah, one or the other.
Okay. And once you've gotten that base down, then you can split your focus and follow different groups and them doing more strange, different things.
But you have to have that foundation first.
I don't feel I ever got that foundation with Force Storm.
Okay. So that's our word to the wise. For those of you who have been curious about this title and don't know if it's one you want to buy into or not, understand that this is the case. You're going to have these kind of disparate characters all off kind of doing their own thing at the same time. And if you're okay with that type of a story, I would say go ahead and go for it because I think the story itself is still good. The device or the, not the device they use, but
particularly the last half of this book I did enjoy.
Yeah.
And the other thing that may just make it that much easier is, particularly if you buy it, is, you read it, then you can go back and read it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, when I've only got it,
I think you even said that before. There's one of the other ones that you like got halfway through, you just put it down. Like you had to put it down, walk away from it, and then you came back and then you reread it again. And you got all the way through.
I think the first couple of pages of the first issue when you first started it four issues ago.
Right.
But what I did like and what you liked was the revelation about the character in there.
Yeah.
Another book that had some character revelations in it. Actually, there's a number of books. The next one we're going to talk about. With character revelations, Incredible Hulk number 7.
Point one. I gotta throw that in there because I actually had a little bit of confusion, earlier because I thought that the point one meant that it was a one-off. It was a one-shot, issue.
Single point story and then going on.
Right.
Which my understanding is that Marvel's doing the point ones to let you know this is the beginning of a new story arc.
Yeah.
So it could in fact be a one-off story and then this 7.1 would be followed by 8.1.
Although now that I think about it, if I remember correctly, Marvel's numbering scheme, if they do a one-shot, they actually don't give it a number. They just label it as one-shot.
Yeah.
And they put it out there in the wild like that.
I think
that's the way they do it now.
Well, it also depends. Is it a one-shot story that's in the actual arc which or is the, what know, this would be, the or outside, or outside, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, is it a single story that takes place with the character outside of the regular continuity? This does take place inside the regular continuity.
And, ooh, boy, does it.
Different artists this week, and a lot of the art inside here actually, it worked. And Aaron was towing the fine line with this one. I think so? Yeah, I do, cause Aaron, well, working on Wolverine and the X-Men, I didn't enjoy. He got headed towards that tongue-in-cheekness with this. And actually,
there were a couple pieces in here where I damn near flat-out facepalmed.
Yeah, probably the same page.
The eyeball dork and Doom at the beginning talking about sowing his wild oats.
Yeah, well,
I never thought that gamma-radiated oats would be something worth watching, but...
The one that got me was the Hulk having a nice, relaxing bath in lava. As his hot tub, which... It's right there on that fine line between I can understand the Hulk doing this and not even the Hulk would do that. But yeah, there's a wonderful page, and I think the art style pays off so well for this. I'd call it a 2-page spread, but it could be construed as two single pages. It works best as a 2-page spread, I think.
Well, it's full long panels. Single page, full long panels, from top to bottom, four on each page.
Yeah, full width.
And each one is sort of like a plethora.
What's the Hulk doing now?
Right.
And yeah, it starts
off. Where's Hulk?
The Hulk's cooking himself a shark for dinner, you know, sitting in under a cave. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's actually pretty close to the end where he's cooking himself a moose.
I do like that. The fact that it goes is sort of like full circle.
Yeah.
And then you see an almost sort of like, okay, I'm here again. I've run out of fun things to do.
When
you can do anything, what do you do? Well, eventually you come up with anything that
it's the Hulk's walkabout.
Yeah.
Is what this is. Yeah. He's riding a Triceratops.
Which I'm guessing must be Savage Land or something.
Yeah.
Interesting part of this is actually in the comic book Chew, there was a piece they brought up this kind of idea. And they say, when you're allowed to do anything, what do you do? And they say, first you do anything you've ever wanted to do. Then when you run out of that, you just start doing anything that you could think of.
Yeah.
And then after you've done that, then what do you do?
Yeah. And well, what this leads to is the Hulk basically going, I am empty. And he's drinking at a bar. And again, there's another great shot of here where you just see this massive back Hulk as he's leaning forward on the table, trying to get drunk. And, you know, he agrees with Wolverine, it tastes good, but it doesn't get you drunk.
Yeah.
Or at least for a guy like the Hulk, Wolverine, it can't get you drunk. No matter how much you do. Same thing with Cap. He can't get drunk.
Yeah.
As much as they wanted to.
The first half of this book is sort of like, okay, Hulk is finally free of Banner. Now what?
Yeah. The chains are off.
Yeah, the chains are off. So what's he going to do? And so he goes and he does.
Yeah.
Now what? And that's the whole thing, is that now he can do whatever he wants, and he's reached that limit. He literally can do anything, and there's nothing left that he wants to do.
But he's lonely.
Nah.
That's part of the revelation of the end.
Part of the revelation. At least they try to say that, but
well,
I don't think that the things that he did, if he had somebody there with him doing those things as well, it would have necessarily been any more fulfilling.
Well, the question is, would doing those things with somebody else make those things more fulfilling?
Or would the having fact of somebody being there be fulfilling?
Which they deal with, you know, with the eyeball guys that you were talking about
when they have
to face those. Which, to be fair.
Even they say that they're schmucks.
That was the part of the joy of it, is you've got this master villain, the Orb, and...
Is he really a master villain? Because he looks like a schmuck to me.
Okay, but for the layout of the characters, how they're presented in the story,
He's
the master villain. He's the mastermind out there to steal people's eyes.
Defug?
Yeah. But his henchmen are even going, why did we sign on with this guy?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beauty of it, is it allowed you to take that kind of meta step that's necessary for a villain like the Orb, where you're doing exactly what Jester was good with
Yeah, and even the guys that are working with them are saying the same thing. So it gives you that sort of reader feedback in a way of them breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, without having to actually break the fourth wall.
Right.
So it was, that was a great work, because otherwise, you know, the orb would be the type of thing that would make me put this book down.
Make me throw it out a window. That's what it would do.
Yeah. Which,
okay, you guys, you had me until here. That's it.
And I feel, like, Wolverine and the X-Men, I feel, is just full of the orb and characters.
Oh,
like,
really?
Not directly, but I feel like their characters are written that way. Okay. And that's why I don't enjoy
Aaron
that
as well?
Book. Yeah.
Okay.
Aaron is one of those writers. Sometimes I'm really impressed with what he's done. Sometimes I am not.
Not so much. Well, something to mention is, and I don't know if this is Aaron specifically, but to me this feels like a larger Marvel DC thing. And we've kind of bantered about this stuff back and forth before. But the comedy difference between a Marvel book and the comedy in a Marvel book and the comedy that's in a DC book, to me, the Marvel comedy almost seems slapstick. Like bathing in lava and
they do the have orb a character like called that. Slapstick.
I'm well aware.
Yes.
But the humor in a DC book is much more dialogue based.
It's more of a wit, which
you
can't find in Marvel books. Spider-Man has a lot of wit.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Without a doubt. But the Spider-Man is the witty character of the Marvel Universe. Whereas the DC Universe is witty. And that's a distinctly different comedy style between the two that I picked up on specifically because of this book. I hadn't really noticed it as much before.
It's one of those that reading enough of it, you finally start to...
Yeah, it just sinks in.
Reading Uncanny X-Men this week, which you didn't read, but I did, and reading Namor's character, which is just flat. And it's very much, I will not talk about my conquests, but if others wish to talk of my conquests, it is only because I am that good. It's a very flat of, I'm arrogant, and...
It's a one-note character.
Yes, it very much is, and there is some humor to be found in that, but after a couple of panels, I find it grating.
Yeah.
And unfortunately...
Which, you got that same way with him in Defenders as well, because there's...
Yeah.
Actually, almost all the characters in Defenders are kind of that one-note...
Yeah, I felt that's one of the reasons why I dropped Defenders, as I felt it was very one note.
Although I will say, something that Marvel has been doing well, and this is actually going to branch over to something else we wanted to mention.
Okay.
Marvel has been doing a great job with asides. In, in intros and in dialogue boxes inside of stories for, A versus X and Versus, more so in Versus. Those have been just flat out freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
And in,
to read the story recap for Verses is absolutely hilarious.
In story, there's great little comment things of like, ouch, you know, and stuff like that. But the Defenders
fun
does
fact,
as well.
This is not so fun.
Yeah. In Defenders, they don't do it in dialogue boxes. They actually do it in margin notes at the bottom of the pages. Sort of like, almost like a nod to Mad Magazine in a way, where they would have the Sergio Aragonés little...
Well, it's also a note to some of the old comics where it used to say, you know, comic continued on next page.
Yeah, which they do that as well.
Yeah, they'll do that as well. But it's a throwback to that when they do something like that. Or, one of my favorites was actually the continued from page to previous or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going, how am I supposed to know to have gone to this page with them? I didn't have the note two pages previously.
Exactly.
So, but... Again, nowadays they feel readers are sophisticated enough. You don't need that. There's to tell you what's the difference between the ads.
So
they're able to play with it, use it as the, here's what we used to do, and then show you, here's a funny comment about, this, or don't forget to pick up Wolverine and Wolverine and the X-Men.
Right. Or, oh, hey, you're curious about what he's talking about? Go check out this book. But definitely using it for comedic value is, I think, something they've gotten really, really right in these books recently. Especially in, like I said, especially in Verses.
Well, it's interesting because while they had some of that in the first issue of Verses, I didn't like it as much as I liked what was done in the second issue of Verses. The second issue, I felt the jokes hit a lot better, a lot stronger.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
The stories were told better in the second issue of Verses. And I was definitely a lot happier reading the second issue of Verses than I was reading the first issue.
Oh, yeah. This one was fantastic. This is really, really good.
For Although, being a I'm book that to, is told specifically, this is just two people punching each other. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much.
These stories have become nothing more than out and out fanboy fodder. And they are completely unabashed about that fact. I mean, they know exactly what they're doing and they're happy with it. As a matter of fact, we had talked about this beforehand, in Avengers versus X-Men.
Yes.
Which, yep, there we are. Round four has begun. Basically, this entire book was, Avengers fighting X-Men as advertised.
Yes.
And by the end of the book, it is Avengers fighting X-Men.
Yes.
On the moon.
Stage unlocked.
Congratulations. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. One other thing we're going to do, before we move on, because these are just going to be mentions, but, dude, pronounce that.
Charlampios. All right.
No, that's a D, dude. No. Almost. You almost got it. Let's see.
Charlandios?
Charlampidus.
All right, so.
Charlampidus.
Even with the pronunciation Chupacabra. Problems with Chupacabra.
Chalupka.
No.
Oh, wait. No, sorry. Well, that's my underwear.
Whoa. I don't need to see that, but that back.
That's why, that's why I'm on the other side of the desk, so you can't see this.
All right, but.
Might want to move
this was actually, for me, this may have been the best written issue of Avengers versus X-Men as well. Hickman actually wrote the script for this issue, and the script-wise, this may have been...
You know, for a second, that sounded like you were, like, incredulous about that. You know, Hickman actually wrote this one also, which is surprising because I liked it.
No,
that's what came across, that's all.
No, because I've been enjoying a lot of Hickman stuff. With this issue, particularly Wolverine wearing the polar bear was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Although I'm not sure why she didn't just pull up to him. She's got the plane, just land near him. Why do you need a trail of beer? It was a joke. It
softens him up a bit before he gets there. You know, he's got some goodwill towards the beer provider.
Maybe arguably because he was wearing the bear, she couldn't identify where he was versus whether it was just a random polar bear walking around. So.
Until the polar bear started drinking the beer.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I'm not gonna even go with that.
Again, slapstick.
Yeah, it's a bit towards slapstick. I don't know that it was quite written full slapstick.
Yeah.
It was interesting to see, how Wolverine has been kind of bounced back and forth between the AVX books.
Yeah.
And developing, so.
Alright, next up we're gonna go to a number one that was this week. And this is actually from Top Cow, which we usually don't deal a whole with a lot.
Top Cow doesn't have a whole lot to come out there. Of course, Top Cow's an Image imprint, so.
Right. Although, from what we've seen, they're gonna have more and more new stuff coming out in the next few weeks. So I think Top Cow will be one to actually watch. This one, however, is Hardcore, written by Kirkman!
And yes.
Covered by Silvestri. Haha! I got it right! Yes!
I finally got it right! Correctly.
Okay. Silvestri. I can do this. Interior art by Brian Stelfreeze. This is a very interesting book. The concept of it I thought was pretty on the nose. It wasn't real,
It's definitely, territory that's been covered before.
But this covers it better, I think, than others have done it.
There's a lot out there. So to say it's doing better, I mean, you've got, there's arguments like movies like The Surrogates, which based on a book. Yep. I haven't read the book, so I can't tell you if this was better than what the book did.
Right.
The movie apparently was pretty decent with Bruce Willis in it.
Yeah.
So, based on it, and actually that was based on a comic book. So it's definitely plowed territory. You know, it's not virgin farmland. However.
Perfect. Well, let's give the quick plot synopsis.
Okay.
The way this works is there's a government program out there where to get to the bad guys, they fire a little mechanical device into the back of the neck of somebody that's close to their target.
Which, from what I can tell, this aspect of actually is a fairly new concept of tagging the target.
Right. Well, tagging
a target that is close to the primary.
Right. The point being that once they hit them with this device, the device then allows a remote individual to take control of that person's body, dropping them into a dreamlike state where they cannot come out of it and fight against the person taking control. They then use that person as an assassin to kill their primary target. And then by the time they pull out of that individual, the person looks guilty for having killed them and they become the patsy for the murder.
So.
Or the assassination in this case.
Now there's a bit of a twist that goes on in this book.
Right.
In that, part of it is the Hardcore, which is the device itself. The device itself that gets lodged into the brainstem actually has 72 hours before it disintegrates. So they have 72 hours.
Or something like that. There's a time limit in place.
Yeah. For the target to eliminate the prime before the Hardcore disintegrates. And if they're still occupying the body, the person controlling it will have their brain fried.
Right.
So.
Bad, badness ensues.
Yes. Now, what happens is, right now they've got one pilot that's actually controlling the targets to take out the prime targets. Mm-hmm. And while he's doing this, the agency gets taken over by somebody that had actually worked to develop the program and then was kicked out. Mm-hmm. So now he's in a target, and before he could go after the prime, he's found out that he's now been compromised and has 72 hours to get back into his own body.
Yeah. So he is now, let's see, he's in a lieutenant of a major drug lord, I think, or something.
Right.
Who is stupping the drug lord's wife, which he finds out when he jumps in. And then he now has, like you said, 72 hours in this lieutenant's body to get back to America, back to wherever it is that this secret facility is, convince the people that he is who he says he is when he very obviously physically is not, and somehow save himself. So it's interesting. We'll have this kind of like short deadline book.
Not to mention he's also got to kill the person that's taken, or at least incapacitate the person who's taken over to the department be able to gain control back to his wife. Now, you're right. It seems like there's a short deadline on this book, that it's, you know, pretty much the guy's got 72 hours to save himself.
But if they can turn 24 into a 6 seasons, I think they can get a good run out of 72 hours.
24, each season was 24 episodes lasting that full day, and that was the day's events, and that resolved the issue.
Right.
Each season was then a new problem.
Which, I'm gonna throw out there, how many really, really, really shitty days can one guy have? Well, I mean, I've had some shitty days. I haven't had terrorists are trying to shoot me, but shitty days.
Yes, but you're not in an anti-terrorist task force.
That you know of.
And if you are, you'd have to kill me. So I'm going to stop with that line of questioning. And we're going to move back to hardcore.
With this pinky.
I want the other one.
Fine, I'll kill you with that pinky.
So with hardcore, then we're facing, yeah. No, there is certainly, you know, it's comic books. Anything can happen. It could be 72 hours. It doesn't occur.
This is Kirkman. He kills people.
Yeah.
He kills people a lot. He's good at it. This is not J.K. Rowling.
it could be we get a new lead character introduced. It could be at 72 hours, something happens that we've not been told to expect. We've been told, but it happens, brains fry, and the person die.
For all we know, in the next 72 hours, somebody else could replicate the type of environment that he's in, and a new anonymous individual starts gunning for him in this other body.
It could be that. It could be that when it fries, he's now stuck in that body.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways this can go. It's a great cliffhanger ending. The one problem I had with this book is I felt like it was explained to me 3 times in this book.
Yeah.
They tell you what's going to happen, then they tell you what's going to happen, and then they tell you what's going to happen. And it'd be, So, yeah, they kind of show you what's going on.
And then tell you
exactly what happened, which is fine because it clears up some of the foggy details. It lets you know that there is a 72-hour window that, you know, they do have to hit the target with the
hardcore. They show it, they refine it, and then they repeat it.
Yeah.
Which, the last one they didn't need. They can do the show and the refine, I'm okay with that. But that last repeat makes it feel like they're slamming a hammer over your head.
Yeah. That was the one thing that I kind of had a problem with is, you know, they almost introduce a character specifically for the purpose of explaining it.
Yeah.
And then they go in and explain it to you later, which, you know, it was fine to show you and then explain it, but it didn't need that last one.
Yeah.
We're now about to hit the same point that the book was in, so we're going to move on.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. We already hit these. There's a few ones that we want to do just kind of some quick mentions on, just because there were particular things in them that were worth it. Justice League, this is the start of a new arc. They're introducing a new villain. They have, and this is a new villain, I think, into the entire DCU, which I like where this is going. I think this is a very, very interesting kind of thing. And something that occurred in this book that I thought was kind of cool is each character or each member of the League was kind of given their own little quick 2 minutes of, okay, yeah, you're this hero, but here's the other stuff that's going on. And it's occurring in dialogue as well. Like, it matches up with what they're talking about.
I almost like that. I started reading this book, and again, there's some character reveals about who the new villain is going to be.
Right.
And you know, he's an author who's dying of cancer, and
who we've actually met.
Yes. He's the one who wrote the book on the Justice League.
Well, he's the one that was narrating the entire...
Yeah, narrated the first arc.
The sixth issue, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one that was kind of going, why are we randomly being introduced to somebody?
Now you know.
Yeah. And so finally, so it has paid off finally. Yeah. And it's interesting because we're shown this guy, he's supposed to be nearly dead, and then he gets up and walks off.
Trying to figure out if that's Jim Lee's art or if the dude actually has a tattoo on his arm. I can't tell.
David Graves, and no, that's supposed to be cancer spots.
Oh, okay.
Cause he's got cancer. His doctor comes and tells him, we've done everything we can.
Yeah, there's nothing left.
We can do some other stuff, but it's just gonna make the last of your life painful.
The medical terms in this, they're all legit.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Leukocytes. Yeah. White blood cells.
Yeah, so he did a little bit of research. And so I read those first couple of pages and I'm like, okay, this is, Graves is going to make a great villain.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
And then I got to the next couple of pages and all of a sudden I'm going.
Yeah, you got stuff going on with Trevor and then you start getting.
But once we got back to the characters, I kind of felt like we're getting back to flat. We've been here, done this territory for the main Justice League characters. Trevor was a little bit different in that they kind of point out, hey, you were with Wonder Woman. Why aren't you?
Which that's a big step forward plot wise.
Yeah. Another big reveal is the letter from Barry Allen that, was brought back to Bruce from his father from the Flashpoint timeline.
I totally didn't pick up on that.
I did have somebody else point that one out to me. But aside from that.
That's really cool.
Which that makes for an interesting little, here's tying Flashpoint in with everything.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But once you started looking at, you know, the history of, you know, like with Bruce, it's a little flashback to, you know, after his parents died and how he is. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got Clark being the last one picked for basketball. It
which
also,
cracks me up.
Yeah, maybe it's because we're reading maybe if this was the only DC book that wouldn't feel so retread. But I don't think anybody could pick up a DC book without knowing that Bruce Wayne's parents were killed and that's why he became Batman. You know, Clark Kent is an alien from another planet.
Has to hide his powers. Which I thought that was interesting that he was picked last and he almost seems like he's upset about it, but yet if he's not using his powers, that's by choice. Unless with the new DCU, and this I think is the case, his powers didn't manifest until later in his life.
Right. Well, they've already done his first flight story, which was with the Legion when he got the ring.
Right.
So it could very well be he didn't have those until later in his life. And
so he does have that feeling of what it's like to be the last kid picked in sports and stuff like that.
And yeah, but even so, when you're being picked for sports, some of that is still popularity.
If
you got two people and one's just a little bit better than the other, you're going to pick your friend. And so being the last one picked means, your friends aren't picking you.
Yeah.
So there is some of that. So even if you're trying to be the bumbling idiot because you don't want to use your powers, it could still hurt because your friends aren't picking you.
Yeah. Let's not go into each individual character because, like I said, this was originally just going to be a quick mention. So.
Yeah. But they did those little asides for all of the characters. And it just made me feel like we've been here, we've done that.
I really liked it, not necessarily because of what they revealed, because like you said, it really doesn't reveal much. I like the fact that they just gave that time to each character, that little bit to sort of say, okay, here's where we are with everybody. Because this is obviously a step forward in time, so it's good to have a quick little catch up.
Well, they kind of, they begin you 5 years in the past, which is when
the
original story arc was done.
Right.
And so, you know that he wrote the book while he was fighting cancer or right around that time.
Yeah.
And now he stepped forward in time.
Or I'm curious, maybe he got cancer from being so close to Ground Zero when they were fighting.
Maybe.
That to me seems more likely and especially would give him that revenge.
Or at least at least that's what he thinks.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the book, they show him, he shows back up. He's now a villain. And at least appears to be much healthier.
I thought he had like an armor thing kind of going on, a power armor.
Well, that's why I'm saying he appears to be much healthier, because he could be wearing a mech suit, something like Cyborg has, and as a villain, or he could be, found some way, like Lazarus Pit or whatever, to be healthy. But bringing him back as the villain at the end of the book and having him interrogating people and fighting people, torturing Trevor to get to the League.
Yeah.
Succeeding,
which in itself I thought was rather impressive.
And then, of course, last part of this book is Shazam.
Which has continued to be good, I thought.
I've loved what they've done with Shazam again. It's the only reason why I've continued with it till this point. Now at least I've got Graves to cling on to see where that arc is going, and I'd be willing to stay on the book without
really
the Shazam.
Yeah, I really think League is worth keeping.
If it continues to grow.
Yeah. I mean, League is DC's flagship book. If nothing else, I would keep it on just for that, because if anything big is going to be happening in the DCU, it's going to be happening there first.
Yeah. But if it's not good, I just can't.
Well, yeah, no, if it sucks, it sucks.
I've read League, I've not read League. I prefer to read League, but yeah, there was a couple of issues where it was really bad.
Okay.
Right before this current arc started. Yeah. So we'll see where it goes.
Another one we're going to mention quick. Well, as quick as we can. Saga, which is Brian K. Vaughan's, next outing. This is the sci-fi one that I felt has had a bit of split personality. Like it couldn't figure out what it wanted to be. This issue kind of shook that off a bit. This had a very rather direct storyline. It did switch around between a couple other characters during the book, but each of those still followed a very discrete storyline that A to B and then done with that character, A to B and then done with that character. Mm-hmm. And this introduces a new character in this storyline, one of the horrors from the previous book, who's this teenage ghost.
Yeah. First appearance, last issue, actual introduction, this issue.
Yeah. And she is just a typical teenager that happens to be a ghost.
Yeah. I think we both love this character.
Okay.
And she wants more for herself. She doesn't want this life that's what she has that is in common with the main characters of this book. They want
more.
They want a life other than what they've known. You know, they've grown up being told, we're at war with these people, you have to attack them. She's grown up saying, in a family that has to attack all the intruders that are coming into their land.
Yeah.
And that's the only life that she knows. And
didn't want in the first place.
And all the characters want to escape that life that they've been told they have to live.
Which, Robot Prince 4, who's not introduced, but who's been in this book previously.
Yes.
Also seems like he's in that same kind of situation. Like, he doesn't necessarily like where he is or what he is at this point. That if he had a chance to get out of it, it seems like he would take it.
Then let me ask you this. Is it the Will with the lion cat?
Yeah, the I love that, the lion cat.
Yeah, the bounty hunter.
No, I'm not gonna pick up another phone call from her. Lying.
Yeah, lion cat is another great character. But the lion cat's master.
Is Will, yeah. And who is, I keep wanting to say the shaft, and that's not what it is.
The stalk.
The stalk, thank you.
Which, the stalk.
It started with an S, I was close. I was gonna say the spider, it's what she fucking looks like, but.
I'm certainly, she is designed after a spider.
Yeah, with the stalk.
Well, of course, Will being a traditional, at least as far as we can tell, human, and the stalk being a spider, and there's indications that there was a relationship there.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out the anatomy. I'm not sure I want to figure out the anatomy on that one, because that just looks all kinds of icky.
Anyways, you've got...
Yucky, icky.
You know, Will, who, kind of seems like he wants out of the life that he's in as being a bounty hunter. He's just, this is the life that he knows, and he doesn't know how to leave his life.
Yeah, just for vernacular, the bounty hunters in this universe are called freelancers. Well, which, apt.
Most bounty hunters tend to work freelance.
Yeah, it's apropos.
I think that's more of a euphemism than...
Possibly. But the last page turn, and there's a big revelation, I would say. On the last page, which we won't spoil here. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah. It certainly changes where the story could go. It could be a minor point for now that becomes bigger later on. It could become the main point of the next issue as well.
I have no doubt that's going to be the main point of the next issue. The main point will probably be getting the father back to health and then promptly putting him back into an injured state.
That
would be my guess.
And that could happen. It could also be it's something that they never have time to dwell on because something else happens.
That's true.
So.
It could just end up being the, kind of the elephant in the room for the rest of the series.
But again, we get a character revelations and development of the character of, the ghost in this. Which, again, we've been talking about.
Well, it's character introduction. I wouldn't necessarily say a progression, but it's just an introduction to her character in general. Well, and it's a fantastic character.
And I'm going to jump over and, we'll go over the last of the books that we both read, which is Vale and the Outcast, and there actually is more development on a character in this one as well.
Yeah. But before we jump into that, okay, though, one thing I will say quick on this. We did pick up Voltron. We did read it. It was a bit depressing as far as, in comparison to the other books in the series have been so far.
Yeah, it was the weakest of the run.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you did actually get to see them finally fighting as Voltron.
Yeah, and they went through the entire Voltron cliche and all the right lines and, you know, Dinotherms activated. Oh, yeah. So they went through the whole spiel, and actually part of that was what I had an issue with, but let's not really get into that. We can talk about that
later.
Did
you have an issue with them actually doing that from
the... Not from doing it, no.
Okay.
It wasn't until that last panel where it was Voltron formed and then superimposed on the panel on the great big block letters, "Let's go Voltron Force." I'm like, are you funny? You could have done it in a dialogue box. You could have done it as speech bubbles. No, you did it as like a frickin' press release.
Well.
Yeah. It's, I thought that.
It's their battle cry. It's kind of like if you read the Avengers, they got Avengers Assemble. It's screamed out. It's in big block letters above the characters as they're running away.
In a speech bubble.
Not always. Sometimes it's just a giant shout.
The way they've been doing this book so far, where they've kind of been, you know, keeping it classy, this was just a giant paintbrush smeared of cheese right across the page.
Okay.
Which, it's a throw to the people that are nostalgic for that, and I completely understand it, but it could have been handled better. I'm off my soapbox. Let's go to Valen.
Okay. With Valen, yeah, they actually show you the world, again, it's world expanding, and it's character expanding because one of Valen's, the people that's traveling with Valen, we don't know anything about her other than she's the one that cast the spells that have allowed Valen to resist.
Well, we know that. We know that demands. she's called a fox.
Yes.
Brown. but we know that that's something more than just her physical attributes. It means something. Yeah. But we hadn't found out what that was until this issue.
Yeah. And we do in this one, we find out about the tribe, or at least the customs culture of the different tribes that she's from.
Yes.
The culture of where these tribes are. And they're very much like an Amazon tribe of all women.
Yep.
They capture men to use for breeding.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if they're not useful for breeding, they kill them.
They kill them.
Not very nicely.
Yeah, I was trying to find a good adjective for that, but not very nicely will suffice.
Painfully?
There's some emasculating? Yeah, emasculatingly?
Let's leave that, but it does kind of show you what this tribe is. You know, it's,
right.
But at least by modern human standards, it's very, it's very barbaric by our culture. But if you were to step into their shoes, if you were to be back on the island of Amazon, I could actually see the Amazons and Wonder Woman's island actually behaving very similar.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And they're actually... Well,
this is sort of like the Amazonian culture, but like with the gloves off.
Well, not even that, because with the current DC revamp of the Amazons, they're using a lot of the more ancient Greek of, they would lure the sailors in, raid the ships, use the sailors for breeding. Mm-hmm. And so this is also very much in that same vein, the classic Greek Roman mythology of the Amazons.
Right.
They raid, they use you for breeding, and women that don't have a clan are sisterless, and they are shameful and need to be put to death.
Right.
So there you're actually facing with this, and there are other customs that they deal with, which is one of the ways that they're able to actually escape. Yes. Now, and actually this, going back to a theme that we had with Saga, there's actually a character in here that doesn't like the life she's living and wants to get away.
Yeah, very true. So,
another theme that kind of carried through the books that we've had
this week.
Just interesting enough.
Yeah, I mean, we've mentioned before that Valen is a title worth picking up and following. It's not that far into the run. This is only issue six. So, I mean, somebody that wants to get into this can get into this very, very easily. It's not so far along that you can't catch up. And it's totally worth it.
And they've been doing stuff every issue to do world building, to make this more than just the small little Hamlet.
It was advertised in the media as being, like Conan the Zombie, kind of. And I think that does it a total disservice because that really is not what this book is. I mean, yes, it is. It's a swords and sandals. it's a zombie as the main character, yeah. but that's really as far as it goes because the Conan world had a very isolationist kind of feel to it. Like everybody was their own little thing. Nobody, there was no interchange. There was no like greater society to the world. And this doesn't have that. This is a fully realized fantasy world that has all these swords and sandals kind of things in it.
I think part of that is, you know, a lot of us are more familiar with Conan from the movies where there's a lot of time traveling between cities and towns.
Right.
So you get these vast opennesses of nothingness except for where you can be attacked.
Yeah.
Whereas in here, they're taking away most of the travel between places and you're winding up, okay, now we're in this city. Okay, now we're in this city. So even that big world.
That's where the action is happening. The action is happening in the town, so it doesn't make sense to show the travel. But whereas something like Conan, the action is occurring between the towns.
Yeah. And Conan, you know, also, particularly if you're just familiar with the movies or a single story, you're only going to deal with a town or two.
Yeah.
You go from point A to point B, you retrieve whatever you need, you kill whoever you need to kill, and then you go back to town A.
And let the women lament.
And so you're only seeing those 2 to 3 places.
Right.
Whereas
it feels that more kind of isolation.
Well, you are trying to go from point A to point B. There's a lot that you're hitting everywhere in between.
Yeah, there's just a lot more going on.
Yeah. So I think with the comic, they have that ability to branch it out over 6 issues. You've had 6 different locations or so. I think the comic benefits from that more so than, say, a movie.
Very true. All
right.
Well, that was it for comics we were going to talk about this week. There were other things we read, but we're going to have to hold off on those because... Well, Lock and Key Clockworks ended this week, which, you're gonna hold off and read all at once.
Yeah, I'll read all 6 and then we'll go back and we'll discuss that for you.
Oh, you bet your ass we're gonna discuss that. Oh, right. Boy.
Do you actually finally got a chance to see Avengers?
Yes, I did.
Okay, quick no spoiler review then.
Yes!
Okay, so that people could hear it, so it doesn't blank out the entire audio on the recording.
No, I think that was pretty sufficient. That really should, That should convey it pretty well, I think.
Something understandable, maybe.
Holy shit balls, that was awesome.
Okay, good enough.
That'll work. Okay.
And other news that many would consider holy shit balls, that's awesome.
Yep. Yeah.
Mark Hamill's returning as the voice of the Joker.
So. Ooh, to the DCU online, which is kind of interesting because I thought that had kind of faded off.
Well, maybe they've got some new downloadable content. It's probably a way that they can get some more players in back to the game. They're releasing some downloadable content for the game. Of course, Mark Hamill is the Joker. They're actually getting the voice of Harley Quinn back from the Batman animated series to come back. So you're getting a lot of characters that, you know, people that were fans of the animated shows are going to wanting to get this. So, you know, DCU Online... Mark Hamill actually said he did not want to do the Joker again. And, you know, the recording of Arkham City was supposed to be his last role as the Joker. So the fact that he's actually come back and is doing this means they either paid him a buttload of money or he was sitting around the house going, you know, I'm bored and it wouldn't be so bad if I was the Joker. So not sure what transpired to bring him back, but I am glad to see that he's back. And more direct for comic book news, Justice League International, which has been one of the stronger of the DC books that's not in their main pantheon. If you look outside of their Justice League characters, JLI has actually been one of their strongest books. And they've announced that it will be ending with issue 12. Part of what makes this an odd story is the fact that it's outselling a lot of the smaller titled books. So there's got to be something going on here. DC's... I don't know if it was fully intentioned to only be a year-long run or if they have decided they need to do a giant shift in how things are going to happen. They will be doing an annual. They had already announced it, and they will continue to put out the annual after issue 12. But this is going to drop enough. However, DC is going to keep their 52 titles, which means something is going to be coming in to replace Justice League International in the lineup. Now, this could be... taking the characters from JLI, rebranding them as a new team, and then sending them back off.
Which, that seems to make more sense, because we've already seen that crossover-ish image, where you have the Justice League fighting against this quasi-other league kind of thing going on.
Yeah,
that does seem to kind of shuffle, you know, fall into that area.
Yeah, if you're unfamiliar with what Justin's talking about, in the Free Comic Book Day issue... that DC released.
Oh, that where it was?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was the 4-page Yeah, fold out spread, the dual gate fold out spread by Jim Lee. And there was a different version of.
Great art, by the way.
Yeah. A different version of Green Lantern in there than we're familiar with. It could be John Stewart, that's but what it looked entirely like, different armor.
Yeah. So. It looked like John Stewart to me.
And based on where Green Lantern Corps is going, it shouldn't be John Stewart. But who knows? I somehow think that that's going to have a big flip over there as well. You've got Green Arrow, which if you remember a couple issues back with Justice League, if you're reading that, he wanted to become a member of Justice League and said
they wouldn't let him play in their club.
But Trevor said, I've got something for you. Mm-hmm. So it could be that they are going to try and do a different version of Justice League Green with a new Green Lantern, a Green Arrow, the Atom. Mm-hmm.
And among others.
Yes.
Go find the big spread. You can fold it out and kind of see everybody.
Tokyo Comic Shop, a lot of them still have issues from Free Comic Book Day, and they'll probably be more than happy to give those out.
Oh, before we move on, I did have one other thing I wanted to mention about the Avengers movie. I just thought about this while I was kind of spacing out there. The Hulk. Am I right?
Oh, yeah.
Am I right? The Hulk. That's all I got to say. The Hulk.
Oh, yeah. Right? Love the Hulk. They did a great job with them in the movie. I know exactly what you're talking about. And if you haven't seen the movie, I don't know what you're waiting for. It's right now Disney's top grossing movie ever.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Up yours, Snow White.
And speaking of, things moving on, we're actually going
to
go back.
Sticking it to the man?
Sticking it to the man, Community, which has actually, the man has actually stuck it to the show. They have fired Dan Harmon, who was the creator and showrunner for Community.
Right.
They do have, they were renewed to do a half season this coming fall.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it interesting what season four is going to be like, that half season, and if it'll get renewed from there. What's the show going to be like with an entirely different showrunner?
Yeah. Which it's, there have been successes like that in the past where the shows have changed who the runner is and it's continued on very successfully. Simpsons is one example. I forget what another example was.
Well, Simpsons, it also depends on which season you want to talk about and when that switch came over.
True.
Yeah, they are on, you know, season 3,628 right now.
Doctor Who is the other perfect example.
Doctor Who has definitely come back stronger.
Many, many, many times.
You
but
go
then you
back
look at other things like NYPD Blue, I think was one that somebody mentioned.
Yeah. There are a lot of shows out there. In fact, most shows do not survive the showrunner changing.
Yeah.
But, you know, Eureka, which actually may not even be the showrunner's fault. They had a showrunner changeover, and there's a lot of people that liked what they did with the show after the changeover.
Mm-hmm.
But Eureka was eventually canceled. We're told through the not-so-official channels that Eureka was canceled because
of some
the
of the actors that may or may not have been playing as Dr. Paresh on the show.
From other sources that... Yeah. While it was not the most, it was the highest rated show on Sci-Fi, it was also the most expensive to produce.
Yeah.
And the
because
people
of the effects and all that.
And because
stuff
they don't want Sci-Fi on the Sci-Fi channel, which is now Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
They don't want Sci-Fi on Sci-Fi,
mm-hmm.
they've decided that they're going to cut their highest rated show because it's not feasible money-wise. It doesn't make as much because it costs more to make. So they're getting rid of all the Sci-Fi on Sci-Fi.
It makes more room for more Ghost Hunters.
Yeah. And Cops reruns. Because we need more Cops reruns.
You know, what they need to start doing is start doing Reno 911 showing, like, in between with all the other cop stuff, too. Just so people will, like, get kind of screwed up. Like, show, like, one or two things of Cops, and then a Reno 911, and then another thing of Cops. Just to watch people go, wait, what? What the fuck?
You know, if they did a web show of just showing people's reactions to that, I think that would be worth it. But back to Community. This is a show that... I've loved. I know, Justin, you've only seen a couple of episodes.
Yeah, and the episodes that I've seen forced you to see. Yeah, they've been very good. I like the show. I just, because I've cut back so much on TV.
Yeah.
It's not something that's really kind of made the cut.
Yeah.
Well, which is unfortunate because I know it's good, but it's just the way it is.
It's one of those shows, the people that love it absolutely love it. It's very much a geek-centric show, mm-hmm. you know, with characters like Abed, who, you know, Abed and Troy, not only do they oftentimes imagine themselves hosting their own talk show or Abed living in his own world, they have the Dreamatorium, which if you look at it, it's certainly designed and intended to be a holodeck.
Right.
And they just imagine stuff in there. And of course, they're both fans of Inspector Spacetime.
Right.
Which would be...
Is the callback to Doctor Who, where it's a guy running around in a phone booth, not a police box.
Yeah.
Which I had to make that distinction out to somebody not too long ago.
Yes.
That... oh yeah, no, it's this guy that runs around in a phone booth. I'm like, no, 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 no. That's either Superman or
Superman does not run around inside
Doesn't run around inside the phone booth, but he goes in and out of phone booths fairly frequently.
He actually got rather pissed when cell phones became popular because he lost his favorite changing location.
Yeah, where does he change now, anyways?
He actually flies up to the Toonami satellite and changes there, which he'll be glad to know is going to be back in orbit. Cartoon Network.
You know, that was a hell, a hell of a segue. I mean, that's, wow.
You like that one?
I'm trying to figure, can you scratch your own ass crack with that much reach? Because you were stretching for that one.
Well, you know, wow. I stole Plastic Man's powers.
Oh, makes it okay. Easy
to do stretches like that.
Better him than Elongated Man, you know? That's not what happened to him.
Cartoon Network in their, Adult Swim block is going to be bringing back Toonami, which is their anime-centric, you know.
To which I say, hells yeah. Oh, and Damon, if you're listening, ha ha. Oh, okay. Wait, no, this isn't Mango. This is anime.
This isn't Mango, this is anime. Okay.
Yeah.
Although many of them are based on mangas.
Yes, let's see. From the speculated lineup, we have Bleach. Yep, that's a manga. And ongoing. Full Metal Alchemist is a manga, but I think that one ended. I don't believe FMA is still going. Durarara, I have no idea what that is. That's new to me. Furikuri, is completed. That one's done. Cowboy Bebop is done.
You skipped Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, which is a variant of Full Metal Alchemist, based on the, closer to the original manga.
Yeah, which, both of these are all both based on the same original manga, which right. is complete as far as I know. Cowboy Bebop's done. Ghost in the Shell has been done for a long, long time. The Standalone Complex is actually specifically only anime, and has nothing to do with the manga at all, other than based on the same source material. And I think that's it. Yeah, stuff they speculated on.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But I still say, hell yeah. You know what? If they're going to bring back Toonami, what they should bring back along with it is Voltron, Thundercats, DBZ, they could bring it back. They could not bring it back. I wouldn't be that upset with it if they did. But I think they moved that to afternoons anyways, so I'm okay with that. Because they made it the Z-Kai or whatever.
Yeah, they did the Z-Kai. Well, yeah, they've done Dragon Ball. They did Dragon Ball Z.
Dragon Ball Z, the American version, because everything is compressed down. So they're not sitting there, you know, squatting.
Powering up for an entire episode.
Exactly. Squatting and grunting for an hour and a half, which sounds more like an MMA fight.
Really? Because that sounds like what happened after I had that really bad hot
sauce. Oh, dude. You know, I got a guy I work with that I got to deal with that crap from. I don't have to hear that here, too.
All
right. I hope he listens to this. I'm going to tell him I gave him a shout out on the show so he can hear just that and know that I'm talking about him.
All right.
Stay away from the taquitos, Mike.
So let's leave the hot sauce and the fighting behind. Let's go ahead and actually, no, let's not leave fighting behind. Let's go to another show that's going to feature fighting. CW has picked up a comics-based show, which CW used to be UPN, used to be Warner Brothers, the WB. Mashed those together, you get the CW network.
What was it before UPN? It was actually something else. There was something for UPN because
UPN and WB combined gave us the CW, which gives us wonderful teeny bopper shows.
Oh, I swear there's something for UPN.
But they're about to give us Arrow, which is a show based off of Green Arrow.
Now, is this show going to go head to head with Archer? Probably not.
Which
is another show I've been told I need to watch and I haven't.
Archer.
Pardon me a second, I'm gonna give a redneck cheer. Ah, okay, there we go.
Alright.
Sorry about that.
Now that you've taken care of that, Archer, I actually saw there is a teaser online so you can see it.
You said Archer.
No, for Arrow. Arrow, which is about Green Arrow, who is an Archer.
He is an Archer? That is in fact true?
They do have a promo for the show online, and it actually looks pretty good. It looks to be like they're trying to do kind of an Ultimate, just like they did the Ultimates, which is a more realistic take.
Well, is this a spinoff?
Avengers?
Is this a spinoff from the Smallville Green Arrow? That was my understanding of it.
That's where the idea originated from. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to be a direct spinoff or... Okay. And I haven't bothered to look at the actors. I was not a Smallville fan. I watched the first season and a half or so and then dropped Smallville. I don't even know if I made it to the second season, actually.
You know, I may have to talk to some people because my understanding is the latter seasons actually did get a lot better. It dropped the Dawson-ish and started to embrace its more comic geekiness.
And that very well may be true, and I've certainly seen some episodes with Lois and Zatanna in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Part of what would always frustrate, actually part
hey,
of-
any show with fishnets can't be that bad.
I love Zatanna. But what
frustrated me- Oh, I'm talking about Rocky Horror.
You're trying to show me your underwear, now you're talking about Rocky Horror. I think I need to get a bigger desk.
I think you're right.
Mostly
just because you have a tiny ass desk, not because, you know, I'm going all, you know.
It is a rather small desk, I will say that.
You have desk envy.
But one of the things that really threw me with Smallville is I wanted to see what the trials and tribulations of Clark growing up would be.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of neat because it started off with Monster of the Week and there was some interesting stuff with that.
And then you got Dawson's Creek.
Well, what screwed me was all of a sudden they start going, oh, well, let's bring in the Flash and let's bring in Green Arrow and let's bring in Zatanna. Mm-hmm. Which, yes, I like seeing Zatanna and her fishnets. But I never wanted to see those ancillary characters in Superman before he becomes Superman the story. Yeah,
I can dig that.
I really, that kind of thing broke it for me. I didn't even want to see Lex Luthor in there, really. Yeah. Yeah.
And he became rather central, from what I understand.
Arguably, they completely moved the geography because they were always going, oh, let's go out for a night on the town in Metropolis. Kansas is in the Midwest. Metropolis is approximately where New York City is.
Yeah.
There's no way you're going to spend the night there unless you're Lex Luthor and can fly charter there. The plane at your own private, you know, G6.
Mm-hmm.
So that always frustrated me as well. Okay.
But talking about Arrow.
Yep. They have an interesting scene. You see him. He's breaking into an old abandoned warehouse and he sets up in there to do his training.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, if you're going to be launching arrows across the room, yeah, you're not going to be able to do that at your house or in the garage.
Yep.
You need a nice bigger space. So.
Have they dropped a date for this yet or no?
Should be in the fall lineup on the CW. Okay. So
we're talking August-ish.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, back when school mm-hmm. season starts and they start airing all the new shows.
Yep.
Yeah. Took a look at some of CBS's new shows. Vegas looks intriguing. It has,
Wasn't Vegas already a show?
That was Las Vegas.
And, oh, excuse me.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, although, no, I think that was a different network, so I don't think that we'll be able to bring in the Montecito Casino. Mm-hmm. So it would be kind of fun. This actually takes place in Vegas when it was forming in the heyday of the mob run Vegas.
Oh, okay. So this is like Rat Pack era.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay,
I'm intrigued.
Michael Chiklis is in it, starring as the mob boss. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of his from
The
Shield.
Good role for him. Good role for him.
Yeah, so that one looks intriguing. So a couple of the other CBS shows, they do have a show called Elementary, which is Elementary, my dear Watson.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, it's what, Sherlock is a five-year-old? Or?
Although that would probably make a more compelling
How
show.
How fun would that be?
Actually, from what this looks like for me, and it's got Lucy Liu starring as Dr. Watson, and Dr. Huh. Jane Watson, which is an interesting twist. They're basically doing what the BBC has done. BBC and PBS, many of you may be familiar with the show Sherlock.
Yeah.
With Benedict Cumberbatch, who's got one of the greatest names.
Most awesome name ever.
Benedict Cumberbatch starring as Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the same premise.
John Smith as Watson. Because nobody's going to remember what the hell his name is next to Benedict Cumberbatch. I mean, let's be honest.
And yeah, they've got, I think, 6 episodes out now. They did 3 mm-hmm. issues season 1, 3 issues season 2. Or issues. If you're British, series.
Series, yes.
Yes. And those, I've seen the first episode, and that's absolutely amazing. You've seen the first two. You said those are great.
I saw I think I'm halfway through the third, which you have to admit, these are a little bit more difficult to watch because they are a full hour. I mean, these are basically mini movies for each specific episode. So to sit down on, and they're all on Netflix, to sit down and watch, it takes
series one is on Netflix.
Yes. I mean, it takes a definite commitment time wise to sit there and go through these because they're not short.
Series 2 is either airing or just aired on CBS.
No, it is airing as far as I know.
Yeah. It'll go through pretty quick. I know it's the first episode has already aired on PBS.
Well, yeah, well, the first episode is Baskervilles, Hound of the Baskervilles.
I thought that was the second episode.
Mm. No, that's the first one of second season.
Okay, I thought that was the second one of second season. So, either way, it's potentially currently on PBS, and mm-hmm. yeah, hopefully soon series two will be available through Netflix. Series one is available on Netflix. So, it's interesting to see if this, cause just like Sherlock is a modern interpretation of Holmes
right.
in modern day London.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if Elementary being a modern day Sherlock Holmes in New York.
Mm-hmm. You said with Lucy Liu being Jane Watson, a lot of people that have followed the Sherlock lore back in the day, I don't know if they've ever specifically stated that Watson is male. And there's been rampant speculation
that Watson was female.
Watson was female. And that she and Sherlock did have a relationship.
Now, the other aspect of that could also be that, you know, at the time, yeah, it was, you know, people like Oscar Wilde were getting castrated and uh-huh. thrown in jail for being gay. So right. it could be that Holmes was in fact gay. John was a man. There was a gay relationship, and people are justifying it by saying he was
a business companion,
female or companion.
Reverse.
So there's debates on it. It'll be interesting to see how CBS pulls off Elementary.
I'll say interesting note on that. Talking about Sherlock and Oscar Wilde, they're actually Wilde specifically is mentioned in this week's issue of The Shade, which is in that same time period in Paris. Dealing with opium dens and the whole very Sherlock Holmes era. And
actually, that's one of the things that I found rather interesting is when they introduce Jane Watson, she's there as Holmes' sober counselor, which in the British version of Sherlock, Holmes is addicted to the drugs. He's still on the drugs. They don't show a whole lot of it, but there is use. Whereas with the American version, it'll be interesting to see how they're going to do it with him being sober, and I suspect that was something that came down from the bigwigs going, we don't want to show drug use on the American television networks.
Which, even the BBC one, it's drug use, but it's a very, it's not the shots in the arm thing. No. He quit smoking cigarettes. And so if he has a particular problem he's really, really mulling over, he starts applying nicotine patches all the way up his arm. And however many patches it is how difficult
a problem it is.
If you're wearing four patches, it's a four-patch problem.
So maybe they'll be carrying that over to
Possibly. Something along those lines would make sense.
So it'll be interesting to see where that goes and how it will relate to the mm-hmm. British series.
And rolling all the way back to where we started, it'll be interesting to see where Arrow goes and how it gets started.
Absolutely. And we did have one last bit of information.
Yeah, I'm going to take this one because it's video games. That's up my alley. The director for Ong Bak has signed on to direct a new Tekken movie, which, from what I read, it appears to be a live-action Tekken movie. This is on the heels of one that went straight to video Netflix not too long ago and did not get very good acclaim. As anybody that's seen Ong Bak knows, this guy definitely has some very staunch martial arts pedigrees behind him as far as being able to show good combat. So this is a big step in the right direction for having a good video game movie being created.
Yeah.
There have been some very good animated features that have come out in recent years for Tekken and for Street Fighter, for that matter, that people have really, really enjoyed. Tekken has been kind of light on plot forever. The game itself.
It's a fighting game. Two people fight.
Yeah, you don't really need it. It's a fighting tournament. That's pretty much your plot.
If you pick up the book Versus, that's what you got.
That's exactly what it is. There has been storyline and...
Actually, to be fair, if you pick up Avengers versus X-Men, you've pretty much got Tekken.
Same thing, yeah. And the fan community has actually created more of the lore behind the Tekken universe than has ever actually been disclosed in the Tekken universe. That being the case, we're finally now seeing movies being put out that are giving us new plot and story to a franchise that, and I'm going to include myself as a fan in this because I am a Tekken fan, that we've always speculated has been there, but we've never actually seen before. So this is, I think, as I said before, a big, big step in the right direction. Whether this will actually pan out, I don't think this will get the, it's not going to have a huge box office hit, I don't think.
No, but it might be just enough, it might make just enough, particularly if they go full bore on this. This is the guy, he gave us Ung Bak the Thai Warrior, he gave us The Protector, Chocolat.
The bone-breaking fiesta, yeah, I believe is how we characterize it.
The Protector is a clinic in how to break bones.
Oh, was it
the,
I thought it
was The Protector. He directed both, so it's okay.
Which one had the one that the guy does the knee strike from like 10 feet away?
I think that was The Protector.
Was it Protector? Yeah, they basically like stuck him on a, like one of those, pneumatic launchers and just like launched his ass across the room into the dude's face.
Yep. And, awesome. Yeah. He did White Elephant and Chocolat, so those are the big things that you're looking at. Mm-hmm. But yeah, of course, Ung Bak was the big one in 2003 and, they brought out, and, the, Protector, which was brought over by Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Quentin Tarantino brought that over Ung Bak and put it into the American theaters.
Yeah.
And of course it's, you know, the type of film that, you know, he wanted to remake, which is why we got a movie like Kill Bill.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I don't know where that came from. But. Well, that was it. That's everything we had for this week.
That's a lot of stuff this week.
Yeah. I mean, we're coming in, quarter over an hour, so.
Which.
This is
for as much as we've packed in here, I think we've actually done pretty good. Including some of the side trips that we've made.
Yeah. We'll never be able to avoid rabbit holes, let's be honest.
No. Well, that's part of the fun of the show, is to see where the rabbit holes take us.
Yeah, where our twisted little minds are gonna wander off to. But, that being said, this week, just like every week, you can find all of our contact information at about.me/comicbooktesseract. The website is thecomicbooknerd.com. We have our own little section on there, so find the nice little graphic over in the sidebar for Comic Book Tesseract and come and check out all of our episodes. They're all on there, nice and archived. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Felix T. Cat. That's with a K and two T's. And Jason is at J. Polyev. Our email address is comicbooktesseract@gmail.com. And you can leave us a voicemail or a text message at 50 Tesseract. That's 508-377-3722.
You could also follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/comicbooktesseract, and on Google Plus, gplus.to/comicbooktesseract. All this information is available at about.me/comicbooktesseract.
So that is it for this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Justin, on behalf of Jason Polyev, saying have a good night, and we will see you next week on the Tesseract.